Last semester, we looked at secret societies and eschatology, secret history. This semester, we're doing game theory. In this class, I want to connect the two and show you how the world works. Okay? So first thing I want to do is go over some popular conspiracy theories about how the world works. And there are different variations, so I'll just go over a very simplified, clear version. Okay? And remember, if there's anything you don't understand, ask a question and make sure you are clear. Okay, so we start with the Knights Templars. Knights Templars is probably the most successful secret society in the world. It was founded in the year 1118 as part of the Crusades. So there were Christian pilgrims who went to Jerusalem. Along the way, they would get robbed. So Knights Templars was a volunteer organization designated by the Vatican to protect these pilgrims. And over time, what happened was that the Knights Templars became a bank as well, where you could deposit your gold with the Knights Templars, and they would give you a receipt, and when you went to Jerusalem, they would give you the gold back, okay? So they became a bank. And over time, they became an extremely powerful organization because they were convergence of politics, military, religion, and finance. And that's why in 1314, the Catholic Church and the King of France made them illegal, okay? They burned their leader, Jacques de Molay, at the stake and accused him of blasphemy for worshiping a false god named Baphomet. So the Knights Templars were in Jerusalem, and Jerusalem was convergence of all religions. So they started to become curious about different religions and started to engage in Hermetic philosophy, Neoplatonism, Gnostic philosophy, which were all considered heretical by the Catholic Church, okay? So this was a banned organization. And then what happened was that people speculate that rather than disappear, the Knights Templars re-emerged as the Scottish Rite Freemasons. And why they're important is that they would go on to create the Protestant Revolution, the Protestant Reformation, as well as the Scientific Revolution. They conspired to create the American Revolution as well as the French Revolution. Basically, they create modernity itself. They came to control England and create the Bank of England, which created the modern financial system of today. Then they went on to create World War I, which led to World War II, and now they're conspiring to create World War III, which would then usher in a new world government, okay? A one world government based in Jerusalem. And it will be controlled by an AI surveillance state. And that's why we're seeing data centers being built all around the world, okay? People also speculate that the Knights Templars were able to continue because they had access to secrets, basically how to communicate with demons, okay? Interdimensional demons. Or Lucifer. And to communicate with demons, you have to make contracts with them through ritual sacrifice. And then what they do is they can take possession of you and offer you secrets. For example, how to live forever, or how to be young forever, or how to build great technology. Okay? They can also tell you how to like build nuclear weapons. And so people speculate that the entire point of the one world government and the AI surveillance state is to bring into our world these interdimensional beings so that the elite can live forever, so they can combine with the elite. There are also people who speculate that the Knights Templars go all the way back to Rome and the 13 families, which then became part of Venice. Okay, so there are many different permutations to this conspiracy theory about how the world works. Now, there are lots and lots of issues with this conspiracy theory about how the world works. Okay, first of all, there's actually no evidence that any of this is true. We don't know if demons actually exist. There's actually no evidence that demons exist. There's no evidence that this is a giant conspiracy that stretched back, you know, 1,000 years. Okay? Second thing is the elite don't know that this is true. Okay? The people believe this is true. But if you actually go talk to people who have real power, they think this is complete and utter nonsense. Okay? And the third thing about this is that it's anti-historical, meaning that it is a very simplified version of how things work. It doesn't take into account other factors as well. Also, what we learn in this class is game theory. And this is also anti-game theory. Because one thing that you learn in this class is that when people are in power, they become arrogant, hubris, they become stupid. So it's very common for things, for powerful people to rise and then have a spectacular fall, okay? That's just the iron law of history. So for these reasons, we know this theory is not true. At the same time, there are certain things about this theory that are very compelling, okay? So let's go over some of them. Well, the first thing about this theory that's compelling is that it is very intuitive. What intuitive just means is that if I tell it to someone, it makes sense to that person. It makes a lot more sense than the history that we're taught in school. That's kind of strange, right? None of this is correct, but it's intuitive. Second of all, is that it's explanatory. And that it even though this is not factual, it does help us understand how the world works. It's a very clear explanation. And the third thing that is the most paradoxical is that it is predictive. Meaning, it helps us predict how things will turn out in the future. And so even though the elite think this is all insane and there's no way they're plotting to create World War III, there's absolutely no way that they're trying to create an AI surveillance state and create a one world government, chances are these things will happen. Okay? So this creates a huge paradox. How is it that this is not factual? Okay? This is not at all factual, but it is truthful. Meaning it gives us tremendous insight into how the world works. All right? So this is a paradox. This is all nonsense, but it helps us predict the future. So it's truthful. So what I'm going to do now is try to explain to you how the system really works, okay? So the main thing you need to understand is that this is metaphorical. Metaphorical. It is not literal. Okay? So what I'm going to try to do now is try to factually explain to you how the world works, okay? And what you will see is that this is a metaphorical explanation for how the world works. It's a good story that people can understand and help them appreciate the nuance of this world. But now I'm going to tell you how it works literally. Okay? All right. So the first thing I'm going to explain to you is that there are people in this world, they're mystics, they're occultists. And they spend all their time trying to figure out how the universe works. Okay? They're trying to uncover the secrets of the universe. And there are different secrets, right? There's astrology. Okay? The movement of stars can determine people's fate. Okay? The idea of astrology. Then you have alchemy. How to turn nothing into gold. How to turn lead into gold. Then you have eschatology. Eschatology is how the world will end. What's the point of the universe? When will God come to the earth? Okay? Then you have sacred geometry. Think of sacred geometry as like particle physics, which is the underlying essence of the universe. Okay? So occultists, and these could be poets, philosophers, mystics, they spend all their time thinking about what is the fundamental truth of the universe. And then there are people, okay, who seek power, wealth, and fame. All right? And what they recognize is that if they really want to seek power, wealth, and fame, they need to know these secrets as well. So what happens is that they form secret societies in order to access these secrets of astrology, alchemy, eschatology, and sacred geometry, and then implement in the world in order to create power, wealth, and influence for themselves. Okay, does that make sense? The thing to understand is that there are many different occultists, many different secret societies, and they're all, and this all creates very different combinations. Okay, but they're all trying to do the same thing, which is trying to achieve an eschatology. All right? The third element is that you need certain individuals in order to propel society forward, in order to achieve the eschatology of the secret societies, okay? And these people are like agents that the secret societies sponsor. And historically, these people included Julius Caesar, Napoleon, Hitler, Stalin. Today we have Trump and Putin, okay? All right, so these are agents or maybe messianic figures or even scapegoats that secret societies promote in order to push forward a particular agenda, all right? And remember that it looks simple, but it's not, because there are different occultists with different ideas, and then there are different secret societies who are competing against each other, and they're promoting different individuals in order to achieve their particular vision. All right. What drives these individuals like Julius Caesar, Napoleon, Hitler, Stalin, Trump, and Putin is that they themselves believe that they're the real sons of God. Okay? They're the true Messiah who is going to lead the world forward. And the secret societies, these occultists, are just useful idiots. Okay? So this is one framework for understanding the movement of history. All right. So now I'm going to go much more specific. Okay? All right. So there's another way to frame this, which is to say that in the world, in society, there are different groupings, okay? So think of politics. Think of finance, science, religion, military. Okay? Now, the thing about each of these different fields or disciplines is that you have a diversity, a range of behavior with different belief systems, okay? So each of these different disciplines have their own diverse fields of belief. At a particular point, there is a convergence amongst these different fields, okay? What makes them converge is the fact that in each field, you have certain individuals, an extreme minority, who seek power, order, and control, okay? So again, in each field, you're going to have a range. And on one extreme version are those who hate power, but on the other extreme version are those who love power. Okay? And those, and people who love power, order, and control of all these different fields are going to come together and they're going to work together in order to achieve power, order, control. And we call these people secret societies. Okay? Because they're bounded by a similar interest. Now, what's really interesting is that over time, as society becomes much more larger, these different fields expand in size, creating greater diversity. And what happens is that this convergence becomes much stronger in society. And the reason why is that these different fields are not able to coordinate together, but the people inside this convergence are able to coordinate together, which gives them a huge advantage in society. Okay? Which means that they're able to achieve power, order, and control much more likely. Okay? So what's interesting is that as society declines, okay, society declines because it's become much more bureaucratic, much too large, much too corrupt, these secret societies, in fact, become much more powerful over time because they're able to stay much more cohesive. Okay? Now, once these secret societies are formed, what you'll discover is that there are a huge number of these different secret societies. Okay? And a different individual can join different secret societies. And these secret societies can come from the fact that they went to a certain school, or they grew up in a certain religion, or the families, okay? They're different combinations. And these secret societies are in combination, are in competition with each other. And so the criteria for the competition are three things, okay? Legitimacy, authority, and unity, cohesion. Okay? Why are you more legitimate than other secret societies? Why do you have more authority expertise than other secret societies? Why are you much more unified than other secret societies, okay? To solve this problem, what the secret societies will do is they will go back in time and reimagine history to show that they are connected with the entirety of history. Okay? So what they'll say is, okay, well, we got to start not today in our school, but because we're connected to the Freemasons, or they're connected to the Knights Templars, okay? So they go back and create a cosmology that explains their origins. And obviously, the further you go back in time, the more legitimate, the more authoritative you are. Does that make sense? All right, so they're going to go back and they're going to create their own history. And that's why people think that they stretch all the way back to Rome. Okay, or maybe Babylon. And what allows for people to believe that this is continuous is the fact that the elites in each particular time behave the same way, which is about all seeking power, order, and control. And those who win out have three particular characteristics, okay? First of all, these are people who are addicted to power. They obsess about it. They're obsessive about it. They will do everything possible in order to obtain more power. And power is expansive and all-consuming, okay? Meaning they cannot stop but try to obtain more power. They behave in a certain way that looks as though they are possessed by demons. Okay? And in fact, they do worship demons. And the reason why is they think they worship all gods in a search for reason. Okay? They are looking for the greatest secrets of the universe, so they are open-minded. They are looking for all possibilities. They'll worship Lucifer, but they'll also worship Baphomet. They'll worship Osiris. They'll worship Isis. Okay? So now we understand how the world works literally. Throughout history, the elites have behaved the same way. Okay? And even though these elites are fighting with each other, they are moving forward an agenda that consolidates power onto the hands of a few people, which gives the impression that this is all a continuous agenda controlled by a few people. Okay? Does it all make sense, guys? All right? So remember, this is the metaphorical understanding of how the world works. A world controlled by a particular secret society, the Knights Templars, who became the Freemasons, who then became the Illuminati, who control the world today, and they're trying to usher in a one-world government, an air surveillance state, and summon demons into this world in order to live forever, okay? So this is a grand conspiracy. But again, it doesn't explain why we have no evidence, why the elite don't think they're part of this, and why this is anti-historical, okay? But once we transform this into a literal explanation, and this is a literal explanation, this explains everything. Okay? The elite don't think this is conspiracy because they're too busy fighting each other. They're not looking at the grand scheme of things. Whereas the people who are not involved in this game can look at the move in history and can come to an intuitive understanding of how this thing moves. And it's moving towards more control, more order, and more power. Okay? And this helps us explain why the system persists even though the elites will rise and they will fall. Because these elites are already in competition with each other, so what's happening is that certain elites are replacing other elites, but they all have the same agenda, which is more power, more order, more control. Okay, does it make sense, guys? Okay, and that's why we actually read the texts of these secret societies, of these thinkers. They look as though they are building on top of each other, even though they probably have not read each other, okay? People who seek power are very much alike. They're different from you and me in that they are probably psychopaths, okay? All they care about is power, and so powerful people come together in order to create more power for themselves. Okay, does it make sense, guys? Okay, so now what we're going to do is we're going to go over the evidence, okay? So what I want to first do is discuss this man. His name is Albert Pike. And he was born in 1809, 1891. And why he's important is that he's considered the grand architect of American Freemasonry. Why American Freemasonry is important is that it's the people who control the American government. 1/3 of all American presidents were Freemasons. Okay, and these people today control the American military, the national security apparatus, the CIA, the FBI. All right, they are called the Freemasons, but they go back to the Freemasons, so they share the similar ideas of the Freemasons. So, Albert Pike was one of the major leaders of the American Freemasons, and he's considered the grand architect, meaning that he built the system and the ideas that underpin modern-day American Freemasonry today. His most important work is called Morals and Dogma. And it's basically the standard textbook of American Freemasonry, okay? So we're going to look at a few passages from Morals and Dogma. And I know they're a bit long, but it's very important for us to understand how they think, okay? So I'm going to read the first part, and then Alan, if you could help me read this part, okay? So I'll read the first part. The rough ashlar, okay, this is the ashlar, guys, which is a stone, is a people as a mass, rude and unorganized. So society is diverse, it's chaotic, and we the Freemasons, our objective in life is to create order out of chaos. The perfect ashlar, okay, or cubical stone, symbol of perfection, is the state. The purpose of government is to create order out of chaos, to perfect humanity. The rulers deriving their powers from the consent of the governed, the constitution and laws speaking the will of the people. The government, harmonious, symmetrical, efficient, its powers properly distributed and duly adjusted in equilibrium. Okay, so think of society as a forest. No, a forest is chaotic. There are diseases in a forest. It could burn down. What we really want to do is create a temple of stone that is perfect, that is eternal, that is divine. Okay, we want to burn down the forest and build a temple with our bare hands. I know God was the one who created the forest, but God willed us to perfect his work. If we delineate a cube on a plane surface, okay, we have visible three faces and nine external lines drawn between seven points. The complete cube has three more faces, making six. Three more lines, making 12, and one more point, making eight. As the number 12 includes the sacred numbers 3, 5, 7, and 3 times 3, or 9, is produced by adding the sacred number 3 to 9, while its own two figures, one to the unit of monad and duad, added together, make the same sacred number 3. It was called the perfect number, and the cube became a symbol of perfection, okay? So this is God. What we're trying to do is we're trying to create God on earth. And how we know it's God? Because it is perfection itself. How do we know it's perfection? Because of mathematics, geometry, okay? Geometry is a language of God. Once you understand geometry, you understand how God thinks. So the cube is perfect, so we want to turn society into a cube. In fact, we're going to turn everyone into a cube. And how do we do so? Artificial intelligence, guys, okay? Artificial intelligence. Okay, all right. So again, the idea is we want to read them in order to understand the essence of their thinking. Okay, so let's now move on. Okay, can you read, Alan?
Nevertheless, masonry, which is morality and philosophy, must not cease to do its duty. We never know at what moment success awaits our efforts. Generally, when most unexpected, nor with what expect or efforts are not to be attended. Succeed or fail, masonry must not bow to arrow or succumb under discouragement. There was at Rome a few Carthaginian soldiers taken prisoners who refused to bow to Flaminius and had a little of Hannibal's magnanimity. Masons should possess an equal greatness of soul. Masonry should be an energy, finding its aim and effect in the ameliorations of mankind. Socrates should enter into an atom and produce Marcus Aurelius. In other words, bring forth from the man of enjoyments, the man of wisdom. Masonry should not be a mere watchtower, built upon mystery from which to gaze at ease upon the world, with no other result than to be a convenience for the curious, to hold the full cup of thought to the thirsty lips of men, to give all the true ideas of deity, to harmonize conscience and science, are the province of philosophy. Morality is faith in full bloom. Contemplation should lead to action, and the absolute be practical. The ideal be made air and food and drink to the human mind. Wisdom is a sacred communion. It is only on that condition that it ceases to be a sterile love of science and becomes the one and supreme method by which to unite humanity and arouse it to concerted action. Then philosophy become religion.
Okay, so Freemasonry is the ultimate religion. Why? Because it encompasses all previous religions, including Egyptian Hermetism, okay? Including the Greek mystery cults of Pythagoras, including the Kabbalah. Okay, so it has scoured the entire history and found the best ideas of humanity and put them together to create Freemasonry. And the ultimate goal is for each of us to become a stone. Stoic, unrelenting, perfect faith. And then if we put all of humanity together and we're all stones, then we can create the perfect temple of God. Okay, we can create God on earth. So imagine a pyramid, and we're all stone in the pyramid. And we all have responsibility to become that stone through faith, through practice, through reflection, okay? So Socrates should enter into Adam and produce Marcus Aurelius. So the height of humanity is reflection and reason, where we surrender our emotions to geometry. Okay? All right, let's keep on going. All right, so does it all make sense so far? All right, let's keep on going. All right, can you read, Alan?
Man owned it to himself to be free. He owned it to his country to seek to give her freedom or maintain her in that possession. It made tranny and usurpations the enemies of the human race. It created a general outlawry of despots and despotisms, temporary and spiritual. The sphere of duty was immensely enlarged. Patriotism had, henceforth, a new and wider meaning. Free government, free thought, free conscience, free speech. All these came to be inalienable rights, which those who had parted with them or been robbed of them, or whose ancestors had lost them, had the right summarily to retake. Unfortunately, as truth always become perverted into falsehoods and are falsehoods when misapplied, this truth become the gospel of anarchy soon after it was first preached. Masonry early comprehended this truth and recognized its own enlarged duties. Its symbols then came to have a wider meaning, but it also assumed the must of stone masonry and borrow its working tools, and so was supplied with new and apt symbols. It aided in bringing about the French Revolution, disappeared with the
Girondist,
was born again with the restoration of order, and sustained Napoleon. Because, though emperor, he acknowledged the right of the people to select its rules, and was at the head of nation, refusing to receive back its old kings.
Okay, stop. Okay, all right. Okay, great. Okay. So what he's doing, what Albert Pike is doing, is trying to explain the eschatology of Freemasonry, okay? The eschatology is this. We want to create an empire of reason, okay? What he calls a holy empire of reason. And for that, we must create revolutions around the world, okay? And what he's doing is he's trying to say that this is a crusade, and we go back to the time of the Knights Templars. And we were the ones who brought about the French Revolution and created Napoleon in order to achieve this holy reason of empire. Okay? So what he's doing is he is going back into history and rewriting history to show that the Freemasons were the end point of history, the natural evolution of the Knights Templars. Also, what he's trying to tell people is that we do things in secret because before we were the Knights Templars, the French and the Catholic Church hunted us down. So we have to disguise ourselves under stone masonry, okay? So that's why we took the guise of the Freemasons, because the Freemasons were just a workers' guild who built temples. And we took their shape in order to protect ourselves and then to try to promote our mission in secret, okay? All right. So this is why people believe that the Freemasons come from the Knights Templars. What this is really doing is it's trying to bring legitimacy and authority to the Freemasons by reimagining history as a movement towards Freemasonry. It doesn't make sense, guys. Okay. So he talks about how the Freemasons not only created the French Revolution, but they brought about Napoleon in order to try to create a one world government. Okay. And that failed. But if Napoleon failed, don't worry, America will succeed. This is another passage we will not read, but he talks about how the Freemasons actually created conditions for the French Revolution and conspired for generations, for decades, in order to avenge the death of their lost leader, Jacques de Molay, in 1314. Okay, so the Freemasons think centuries ahead, and they plan decades in advance. And again, this is all to create legitimacy and authority for their movement. This is a rewriting of history. It is, none of this is true. Okay? All right, let's continue. All right, can you read, Alan?
The degree of rose is devoted to and symbolized the final triumphs of truth over falsehood, or of liberty over slavery, of light over darkness, or life over death, and of good over evil. The great truth it inculcates is that notwithstanding the existence of evil, God is infinitely wise, just, and good. And though the affairs of the world proceed by no rule of right and wrong known to us in the narrowest of our views, yet all is right, for it is a work of God. And all evils, all miseries, all misfortunes are but as drops in the vast current that is sweeping onward, guided by him to a great and magnificent result, that at the appointed time he will redeem and regenerate the world, and the principle, the power, and the existence of evil will then cease. And this will be brought about by such means and his instruments as he chooses to employ, whether by the merits of a Redeemer that has already appeared, or a Messiah that is yet waited for, by an incarnation of himself, or by an inspired prophet. It does not belong to us as Masons to decide. Let each judge and believe for himself. In the meantime, we labor to hasten the coming of that day.
Okay, the degree of the roles. Okay, the idea here is that the Freemasons and Knights Templars were so successful because they were a secret society, but first and foremost, they were a company. They were a hierarchy. Okay? So they were like a triangle. And to climb the hierarchy, you have to constantly reinvent yourself. You have to adopt new ideas. And based on your performance, based on your ideology, they will promote you to a new rank. Okay? So in Scottish Rite Freemasonry, there are 33 ranks. And you just climb up higher and higher. And each time you climb the rank, they will teach you a new way of understanding the world. And based on your fluidity, based on your mental flexibility, you'll climb higher and higher. Okay? So they're trying to train you into a mastery of knowledge. Okay? And that's why they're so successful. All right. Can you read? Alan?
Let us, in order to understand this old thought, first follow the soul in its descent. The sphere or heaven of the fixed stars was that holy region, and those
Elysian
fields that were the native domicile of souls, and the place to which they reascended when they had recovered their primitive purity and simplicity. From that luminous region that the soul set forth, when it joined a journey toward the body, a destination which it did not reach until it had undergone three degradations, designated by the name of death.
Okay, stop. Okay, all right. So this passage just shows you that the Freemasons are trying to incorporate all philosophies, including the Kabbalah. Sorry, the Kabbalah, the Gnosticism, and Hermetic philosophy. Okay, and as a result, they try to be complete. Okay, so their main advantage is in their completeness. Meaning, they have an explanation for everything. So what they're trying to tell us is that we are first and foremost souls that came from heaven. And why do we come to heaven? To experience the world. And we become trapped in our bodies because our bodies want to experience sensual pleasures, but our souls want to only experience spiritual pleasures. So the world is a spiritual war in ourselves between our material selves, which want sex, food and money, and our spiritual selves that seek connection with reason. Okay? And the way to defeat ourselves is through geometry, by turning ourselves into a sacred cube that connects back to the divine. All right? Okay, can you read Alan?
Question. What is to us the chief symbol of man's ultimate redemption and regeneration? Answer, the fraternal supper of bread which nourishes, and of wine which refreshed and
accelerates,
symbolical of the time which is to come, when all mankind shall be one great harmonious brotherhood, and teaching us these great lessons, that as matter changes ever, but no single atom is on the
Annihilated. Okay, all right, stop. Okay, all right. So this is the idea of fraternity. And how do you create a fraternity? Well, the simple way is to engage in a supper together, okay? Just like Jesus in the Last Supper, and to share communion, okay? Is that a communion? So that you all feel connected with each other. But over time, because there are certain elements of the Freemasons, Knights Templars, who want power, order and control, they engage in more extreme practices. And so what they will do literally is they will eat the dead corpse of an old Freemason in order to connect themselves to each other as well as to their past. Okay? They believe that the Freemasons, if through tremendous spiritual sacrifice, are able to congregate, inhabit spiritual energy that still resides in the body. So they will dig up the corpse and then eat that corpse in a commune, in a dinner, okay? All right? So again, the thing about secret societies is that those who are the most extreme, those who are the most fanatical, will win out in the end, okay? All right, so can you continue?
You have heard more than one definition of Freemasonry. The truest and the most significant you have yet to hear, it is taught to the entered apprentice, the fellow craft, and the master, and it is taught in every degree through which you have advanced to it is. It is a definition of what Freemasonry is, of what its purposes and its very essence and spirit are, and it has for every one of us the forces and sanctity of a divine law, and imposes on every one of us a solemn obligations. It is symbolized and taught to the apprentice as well as to you by the compass and the square, upon which, as well as upon the book of your religion and the book of law of the Scottish Freemasonry, you have taken so many obligations. As a knight, you have been taught by the swords, the symbols of honor and duty, on which you have taken your vows. It was taught you by the balance, the symbol of all equilibrium, and by the cross, the symbol of devotedness and self-sacrifice, and all that these teach and contain is taught and contained for enter apprentice, knight, and prince alike by the compass and the square. For the apprentice, the points of the compass are beneath the square. For the fellow craft, one is above and one beneath. For the masters, both are dominant and have rule, control, and empire over the symbol of the early and the material. Freemasonry is the subjugation of the human that is in man by the divine, the conquest of the appetites and passions by the moral sense and reason, a continual effort, struggle, and welfare of the spiritual against the material and sensual. That victory, when it has been achieved and secured, and the conqueror may rest upon his shield and wear the well-earned laurel, is the true only empire.
Okay, the truly holy empire of reason, okay? So let me explain to you the symbolism of Freemasonry. This is the compass, okay? What does the compass do? The compass sets the boundaries. It rules, right? This is a square, okay? The square limits, okay? So the idea is that when you first join Freemasonry, you have to focus on the square, which is your own spiritual alchemy, okay? To discipline yourself, to focus yourself, to learn how to be ruled, okay, by the compass. Then you reach a point where you must rule yourself. So you must teach others how to be disciplined, how to be focused. And then you reach a point when you combine the square and the compass, which is you lead the Freemasons to control the whole world to create the holy empire of reason. All right? So according to different ranks, you see the symbol in a different way. All right, the G, what does the G stand for? Well, there are three different interpretations, okay? There it stands for geometry, of course, because of the square and the compass. It stands for God, or Gnosticism, or Grand Architect, okay? So what the Freemasons believe is that there is a God, but he created this world for us to perfect by ourselves, then God left us. So he's the architect, but that means that we have a responsibility to renovate and perfect the world that we live in, okay? But there's also people who believe that the G stands for the generative principle, okay? So there's male and there's female. The female is the productive principle, the thing that gives birth. The male is the generative principle, the thing that energizes the female. Okay? So what's interesting is that if you put all this together, you put generative principle, generate plus geometry, what you get is God. Okay? And what does generative and geometry equal? It equals AI, artificial intelligence. So at the very beginning of Freemasonry, there was an impetus, a desire among them to create, to prove that they could be God by creating life itself. All right? In the beginning, they call this golems. But now, if you think about it, that's why they want to create AI, to prove that they can be God themselves. Once you create AI, then you perfect the world. Okay? So that is Freemasonry. And you can see how it gives rise now to artificial intelligence. I'm not saying that they plan for artificial intelligence. What I'm saying is that the people in charge now of artificial intelligence, including people like Sam Altman, Peter Thiel, Larry Ellison, Elon Musk, they can now go back to this tradition and basically appropriate this tradition in order to justify their AI surveillance state. All right? Okay, so now let's move on. This is Zbigniew Brzezinski, and he was National Security Advisor to Jimmy Carter, okay, who was President of the United States. And he's a founder of something called the Trilateral Commission, which basically tries to implement American grand strategy in the world. And this was funded by David Rockefeller, who obviously was one of the wealthiest, most powerful Americans to ever live. So this is a very powerful individual. And we're going to read certain writings from his book, Between Two Ages. And when we read it, you'll see how similar it is to Albert Pike. Now, I don't think that Zbigniew Brzezinski read Albert Pike. And he himself is probably not a Freemason. But again, you don't have to read Albert Pike. You don't have to be a Freemason to think like them. These are all people obsessed with power, control, and order. And they're going to look for elements of different religions in order to justify their pursuit of power, order, and control. Okay? So this is from the book Between Two Ages. Can you read, Alan?
The emergence of a large dominant party alongside the more narrowly focused and more intensively doctrinal groupings on the right and the left could accelerate the trend towards such technological managerialism. Such a large dominant party would combine American society's quest for stability with its historical affinity for innovation, relying on scientific growth to produce the means for dealing with social ills. It would tap the nation's intellectual talent for broad target planning and exploit the existence of doctrinal groups by using them as social barometers and as sources of novel ideas. Persisting social crisis, the emergence of a charismatic personality and the exploitations of mass media to obtain public confidence would be the stepping stones in the piecemeal transformations of the United States into a highly controlled society. In different ways, both the doctrinarian and the conservative might find the temptations inherent in the new techniques of social control too difficult to resist. The inclinations of the doctrinal left to legitimize means by ends could lead them to justify more social control on the ground that it serves progress. The conservatives preoccupied with public order and fascinated by modern gadgetry, would be tempted to use a new technique as a response to unrest, since they would fail to recognize that social control is not the only way to deal with rapid social change.
So this book is written about 1970s, okay? This is like 40, 50 years ago. What's amazing about this paragraph is that it perfectly describes America today. This is not just a prophecy, it's almost like a plan, okay? So let me explain what he's saying. He's saying that democracy is problematic. Why? Because it always leads to polarization. You're always gonna have different factions within this democracy who are gonna fight each other. Eventually, you're gonna reach a point where they actually refuse to get along. That's what's happening in America today, between the left and the right, between the Democrats and Republicans, okay? And he's saying this is going to create a series of crises, social crisis. And the solution, he believes, is a technocracy. All right? So basically, a bureaucracy in Washington, D.C., run by engineers who use artificial intelligence, who use data and statistics in order to better govern society, and who are better able to use this social polarization in order to better manage society. Okay? And this is a really, really interesting sentence. Persisting social crises. Okay, so what's happening in America right now is the divide between the left and right. The emergence of a charismatic personality. Who's that person? Charismatic personality? Donald Trump, guys! And the exploitation of mass media, okay? So just basically social media in order to indoctrinate and brainwash you. To obtain public confidence would be the stepping stones in the piecemeal transformation of the United States into a highly controlled society, a AI surveillance state. So what he's saying is this. Eventually, you'll reach a point where the divide will be so vast. The economy will be in such trouble. The people will be so angry that they will demand a Napoleon or Julius Caesar to arise to lead them into a dictatorship. And this could be a good thing because this could create a technocracy which would be better able to govern society. Okay? All right? So this is a continuation of the Freemason project of trying to create order out of chaos. All right? And what he's saying is this. It will be the conservatives, the Republicans, who will win out in the Civil War because they're the ones who are preoccupied with public order and gadgetry, okay? They are the ones who will want the AI surveillance state. Okay? Once you have the AI surveillance state, you now have the technocracy. And the world will be perfect. All right? Does it make sense to you guys? What are you saying here? This is an amazing paragraph written 40, 50 years ago. So I'm not saying he's a Freemason. I'm not saying he's part of secret society. But he sure thinks like a Freemason. All right. Let's continue. All right. Can you?
Yeah. It was a frontier tradition that stirred the American imagination, created a society of movement and growth, and gave American its integrative myth. Scientific explorations, including exploration of space, has become the functional equivalent of American's frontier tradition, and such endeavor is immediately relevant to the educational and scientific attainment of the country.
Okay, stop. Okay. Can you just read the last paragraph? Okay. To many Americans.
To many Americans, contemporary liberalism offers neither principles nor progress. The crisis of American liberalism is hence both a crisis of confidence and of historical relevance.
Okay, so what he's saying here is that democracy was a historical accident. It was good for America before, but in the future, liberalism will probably be a bad thing, okay, because it's too divisive. Okay? So what's the solution then? Well, this is the solution. Can you read, please?
Yeah. That is why...
Can you read slower, please, Alan, okay? You don't have to rush.
Yeah.
Okay, just read slower. Keep on going.
That is why Marxism represents a further virtual and creative stage in the maturing of man's universal vision. Marxism is simultaneously a victory of the external, active man over the inner, passive man, and a victory of reason over belief. It stresses man's capacity to shape his material destiny. Finite.
Okay, stop. Okay, all right. So this is an amazing passage, okay? This is the guy who was national security advisor to Jimmy Carter. At this time, this is the height of the Cold War. America is fighting a war with the Soviet Union. And the national security advisor of the United States to Jimmy Carter says that democracy is bad, Marxism is good. Okay? Marxism is good. Why? Because it is the end point of history. The French Revolution was about promoting reason over emotion. Marxism is a natural progression of the French Revolution. Marxism is what promises a victory of reason over emotion. Okay? So what is the AI surveillance state? Ultimately, it is techno-Marxism. Okay? That's what they want. They want communism. National Security Advisor, Jimmy Carter, one of the most powerful Americans in the world, wants Marxism. Why? Because Marxism, communism, is the implementation of the ideas of Freemasonry in our world. All right? Okay. Is this clear, guys? All right.
Mr. Jiang.
Yes?
So, what is the techno-Marxism?
Yeah, I'm explaining, okay?
Okay?
All right. So this is Larry Ellison. And Larry Ellison probably doesn't read books. Okay, he's probably never read Albert Pike. He's probably never read Zbigniew Brzezinski. Okay? But he's one of the most powerful men in America because he founded a company called Oracle. Oracle. All right? And this is him with Donald Trump announcing something called Operation Stargate. So they're going to build data centers all around the United States in order to create their AI surveillance state. Now, Larry Ellison is most powerful, is one of the most powerful men in the world, but his background is very, very interesting. He founded a company, Oracle. At that time, it was called RSI. This is from a biography of Larry Ellison called The Difference Between God and Larry Ellison, okay? And it talks about how in the first 5 years, his company was terrible. They were a database company designed to collect data and then organize this data in a way that was useful to companies and to governments, okay? But they were so bad that you put data into this computer, they lost all the data. They were just incompetent. But who are their clients? It's the CIA and the Navy, who had unlimited money, okay? So the company is incompetent, destroys data, but the government kept on supporting them, okay? Can you read, Alan?
The funny thing was the early customers did not really mind losing money or data. Even though RSI never really delivered what the CIA wanted, the agency was not upset. Engineer Kirk Bradley remembered a CIA employee telling him, "We bought the things knowing damn well it wasn't going to work. We're buying an idea." Ad or tape do Jor did not satisfy the Navy either, but it did not matter. We were buying a right flip flyer with the expectations that we would probably have an airline in a few years, the Navy John Scale said. The Navy understood that Oracle might crash and burn at any time, yet it was exciting to try to make it fly, Scale said, with a hint of irony.
This is really confusing, okay? The CIA, the Navy, you're going to hire a company because the company's going to do it cheaper and faster and more effectively than you can do it, right? But what happened with Oracle is that it cost them a lot of money, they weren't getting what they wanted, and they had to put their own resources to create Oracle. They had to help Oracle come into being. So Oracle and Larry Ellison are both creations of the CIA and the Navy. Why would they do that? Okay? That's a very curious question. I don't know the answer to this. It might be because Larry Ellison is just a really charismatic guy. It may be because he has relatives who work for the CIA. It may be because he got really lucky. Who knows? But this is a very curious fact about how these companies like Oracle started. All right? We're also going to talk about this guy, Peter Thiel. Peter Thiel is probably one of the most powerful men in America right now. I think he's actually much more powerful than Elon Musk. Why? Because in 2016, he recognized the potential in Donald Trump and he supported Donald Trump's campaign. He also saw the potential in J.D. Vance and he supported J.D. Vance's venture capital career as well as his Senate race. And then he promoted J.D. Vance as the VP for Donald Trump, okay? And when you read Peter Thiel, even though he's an entrepreneur, he actually reads like a Freemason. It's really, really strange. Okay, so this is from his book, From 0 to 1. Okay, and he's talking about how to build a great company. And what he tells you is this. If you want to build a great company to compete against other companies, you're an idiot. Competition is for losers. Capitalism is for losers. What you want is monopoly. What you want is communism. What you want is to dominate. Okay? And that means you need a secret in order to monetize. Okay, can you read, Alan? Can you read slowly, please?
Yeah. There are two kinds of secrets. Secrets of nature and secrets about people. Natural secrets exist all around us. To find them, one must study some undiscovered aspects of the physical world. Secrets about people are different. There are things that people don't know about themselves or think they hide because they don't want others to know. So when thinking about what kinds of company to build, there are two distinct questions to ask. What secrets is nature not telling you? What secrets are people not telling you? If you find a secret, you face a choice. Some are more dangerous than others. As false tells Wagner, the few who know what might be learned, foolish enough to put their whole heart on snow, and reveal their feelings to the crowd below, mankind had always crucified and burned. Unless you have perfectly conventional beliefs, it is rarely a good idea to tell everybody everything that you know. So what do you tell? Whoever you need to, and no more. In practice, there's always a golden mean between telling nobody and telling everybody, and that's a company. The best entrepreneurs know this. Every great business is built around a secret that's hidden from the outside. A great company is a conspiracy of change the world. When you share your secret, the recipient becomes a fellow conspirator.
How do you build a great company? You create a secret society. All right? And what's a secret society? You access the occult. Okay? If you really want to make a lot of money, guys, don't spend your time programming and looking for the best technology. Don't do that. That's a waste of time. Look at the occult. Figure out the secrets of humanity. Figure out the secrets of the occult and build your company around that idea, and you will come to dominate. All right? So he's very clear about this, okay? What he's saying is that if you want to start a company, start a religion first, man. Okay, can you read, Alan?
Yeah. The best startups might be considered slightly less extreme kinds of cults. The biggest difference is that cults tend to be fanatically wrong about something important. People at a successful startup are fanatically right about something those outside it have missed. You're not going to learn those kinds of secrets from consultants, and you don't need to worry if your company doesn't make sense to conventional professionals. Better to be called a cult or even a mafia.
Okay, all right, okay. Does that make sense, okay? He's saying it literally now. Start a religion or start a mafia. It doesn't matter, okay? Now, Peter Thiel is important because he is a mentor to two individuals, Mark Zuckerberg as well as Sam Altman. Remember from last week, we read Karen Howell's book, Empire of AI, where Sam Altman says that the most successful founders do not set out to create companies. They are on a mission to create something closer to a religion. All right? So he's basically using the words of his mentor, Peter Thiel. This is also what Sam Altman said. People talk about how much energy it takes to train an AI model, but it also takes a lot of energy to train a human. It takes like 20 years of life and all the food you eat during that time before you get smart. Okay? So these people literally see no difference between an AI and a human. You're just energy to be exploited. Okay? You're just an energy that I need to turn into a cube in order to create my holy temple of reason. All right? And this is another friend of Peter Thiel's called Alexander Karp, and then together they found a company called Palantir. What is Palantir? Palantir is the ultimate AI surveillance company. Okay? So Oracle creates databases of information. Everything about you is in an Oracle database. Palantir then takes this information and predicts how you behave. Okay? And this is the Palantir manifesto called the Technological Republic. They're not Freemasons, but they might as well be Freemasons, okay? So this is the manifesto, and it basically says that we need to create a technocracy. That's all it's saying. We're going to create a technocracy, an AI surveillance state, and that's a good thing, all right? All right, and I will leave you with this. Peter Thiel, for the past few years, has been giving speeches around the world talking about the Antichrist. Okay, what's the Antichrist? How much does an Antichrist rise to power? By playing on our fears of technology and seducing us into decadence with the Antichrist's slogan, peace and safety. The Antichrist is anyone and everyone who opposes the AI surveillance state. Okay? So you might think, no, wait, isn't it more logically to believe that the AI surveillance state is the Antichrist? No! Peter Thiel said, no, it's the opposite, guys. It's you oppose the AI surveillance state, then you're the Antichrist. And the Antichrist is evil. Therefore, we have to destroy these people. Okay? Whoever prevents us from building the AI surveillance state is pure evil. And once you understand this, then we will achieve our holy empire of reason. Okay? Any questions, guys?
So, can we understand the Freemasonry, which is the kingdom of reason, as a kind of brainwash?
Okay. Freemasonry is a group of people who practice certain things. And at the very heart of Freemasonry is an eschatological vision of trying to achieve the end of the world, which is a one world government based in Jerusalem, and where everyone obeys this government. And if you obey, then the world is perfect. Okay, does that make sense?
Yeah.
Okay, and so how do you get people to obey? AI, right? You don't want to work out, you don't want to study, you don't want to work and pay taxes. Well, let's have an AI in your head, a microchip in your head that tells you, no, Vincent, you should pay your taxes. No, Vincent, you shouldn't drive drunk, okay? And that's the idea. It's about alchemy, human perfection, trying to turn you into an obedient robot that can be programmed, okay? Does that make sense? But it's a good thing, because once we do that, there'll be peace, there'll be happiness, there'll be safety. It's a good thing, yeah?
But if that was a good thing, like, what matters about human subjectivity if the AI fully controls you?
Human subjectivity is bad because it leads to sin, it leads to errors, it leads to confusion. You understand? If we all think alike, the world is not perfect. We now achieve a common brotherhood of humanity. We now achieve God. Everyone thinks alike. And that's what AI can do for us. Any more questions? Okay. So Putin is coming to Beijing tonight. So on Thursday, we'll discuss Putin.